Lauren Maisel conducting the New Philharmonia Orchestra in Tchaikovsky's Francesca di Rimini, Fantasia After Dante, Opus 32. It's 5 minutes past 10. This is WUSB Stony Brook, Long Island's first station of the 90s. This has been Valerie Jean sitting in for Jim Wiener this evening. Stay tuned for Stardate, and after that will be Eric Corley, right here on 90.1 FM.
Stardate January 27th. Earthrise seen from the moon. Sounds beautiful, doesn't it? But unless you're in a spaceship moving in orbit around the moon, a lunar Earthrise just doesn't happen. Instead, from anywhere on the side of the moon that faces Earth, the planet would appear to hang nearly motionless in the lunar sky. Earth wouldn't come up. It wouldn't go down. No Earthrise or Earthset. On Earth, things rise and set because Earth rotates on its axis once every 24 hours. The moon also rotates, but it completes a single spin in 27 days, about the same amount of time it takes to complete one orbit around the Earth. The result is that we always see the same face of the moon, the near side. The far side of the moon has been seen by Earthlings only since the dawn of the space age. Likewise, any beings on the far side of the moon would never see the Earth. Earth never appears in the sky from that side of the moon. From the moon's near side, you'd see the Earth in a particular place in your sky, a place that wouldn't change, or at least not enough to notice. Again, it wouldn't change because that side of the moon is permanently locked toward the Earth. So you'd never see an Earth rise from the moon, but you'd see the Earth change its phase, from a crescent Earth to full and back again, all taking place before your eyes over the course of about a month, as the moon moves in orbit around Earth. This is Stardate. Our writer, producer is Deborah Bird. We at Stardate would like to send you a copy of our Stardate magazine. If you'd like to receive one, you'll need to send $1 to cover postage and handling to the University of Texas McDonald Observatory in Austin, zip code 78712. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Get the drops, or maybe doubled up in pain. You may Monthly Go to Roll, Saturday Spotify Time with Luke and Fly Dunbar here in 9.1 FM, WSB, Tony Brook.
Hey, that's it.
Thank you, Tim. You gave me Golden Pop.
If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
You may listen to your messages, record a message, change your personal options, or transfer out a phone mail. To listen to your messages, push listen or 3. To record a message, push record or 1. To change your personal options, push 8. To transfer out a phone mail, push 7 and then push
3. I am assuming that you know who you are. What you may not know is that you're listening to WUSB, good music, Stony Brook, 90.1 FM.
Record a message, change your personal options, or transfer out a phone mail. To listen to your messages, push listen or 3. To record a message, push record or 1. To change your personal options, push 8. To transfer out a phone mail, push 7, and then push 0. If you need help, push help or 0.
Say it again.
You may listen to your messages, record a message, change your personal options, or transfer out a phone mail. To listen to your messages, push listen or 3. To record a message, push record or 1. To change your personal options, push 8. To transfer out a phone mail, push 7 and then push 0. If you need help, push help or 0.
Help!
If you do not push a key in 5 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Now, you folks can't witness this, but I'm looking at a little red light and it's about to go off. And it's off. They've disconnected us. They've carried through on their threat. The computers always do that. They don't give you a second chance. And that's what we don't do here either. We don't give you a second chance. I don't know what I mean by that, but we're here for you to call us up and talk to us. The program is Brain Damage. Eric Corley with you until midnight. We're going to have all kinds of fun tonight. There are going to be a few surprises, I can guarantee you that. That's one thing for sure that will be coming your way, are surprises. We heard all kinds of neat things in there. Donner Party, George Bush, Gil Scott-Heron, Sly Dunbar, all that kind of stuff. But that's over. The present is what's with us now. And that is what we'll talk about. Well, quite a week, huh? Probably the biggest disaster ever on Long Island. I mean, how many people died in that plane crash? 70? Something like that. I can't think of a single event where more people died on Long Island. If anyone can correct me on that, please do. I'd like to know of such an event. But I think even the hurricane of, 1939 that was? I don't think that killed as many people in one fell swoop. Quite a sobering occasion that was. And what's interesting is, you know, this plane crashes on the north shore of Long Island, you know, and of course, my friends in various parts of the country and the world, they know me as living on the north shore of Long Island, rather a small place, you know. So it's, wow, right in Eric's backyard it must have happened. Well, Not quite, but the closest it's ever been, that's for sure. And what's interesting is that the way they're describing the rescue effort makes it seem like this was in one of the most remote places in the world. I mean, wasn't this New York Times report, fog and a narrow, winding, dead-end lane that quickly clogged with emergency and civilian vehicles severely hampered rescue operations of a Colombian jetliner that crashed here Thursday night. Many doctors, nurses, police officers, and firefighters said the gridlock on the only road to the crash site forced them to abandon their cars and walk as far as 3 miles to reach the site, and many of the rescuers did not get through at all. Dense fog grounded rescue helicopters for 2 hours, one pilot said, and as a result, many of the most critically injured passengers could not be evacuated to local hospitals until after 11:30 p.m., nearly 2 hours after the flight plunged into a hilltop on this sparsely populated peninsula. It's a Long Island, for God's sake. It sounds like some remote part of some strange country somewhere. Faced with such daunting logistical limitations, doctors and emergency medical experts said that it was amazing that hundreds of volunteer and professional rescuers from dozens of jurisdictions across Long Island and New York City, working at night in a hilly, wooded area, evacuated the injured as quickly as they did. And certainly is a credit to their abilities. Nassau County, though, think of it. Nassau County being described as remotely populated seems so weird. But what I don't really understand at all is how an airplane is allowed to run out of gas or fuel or whatever. You know, I mean, it's happened to me a lot of times. I've driven around and I've noticed the gas gauge going down to about E or so. And I say, okay, you know, I'm just going to make this one last errand, you know, one last errand, and then I'm going to get gas, I promise. So, car, hear me say that. I'm going to get gas. I've just got to do this one thing first. And, you know, I'll give the various cars that I've had over the years credit. They've been very tolerant of that kind of attitude on my part. You know, I've pushed them enough. I've said, okay, 5 more miles. And I've been very lucky sometimes. I mean, reaching the last open gas station within maybe 30 miles, 3 minutes before it was set to close, and realizing as I fill up the gas tank and get 9.8 gallons in a 10-gallon tank that I would have been really messed up, let's put it that way, if I hadn't made it to that place on time. But, you know, you have a car. You know, you're in charge of your own destiny. And if you run out of gas, which I've done many, many times, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's a pain, but it's not the worst thing in the world. And that's the problem I have with airplanes. You know, you're putting your trust in someone else's hands. And in this particular case, I just don't understand how they could have let it happen. How do you let the gas or fuel, I don't even know what they put in airplanes, how do you let that get so low that you're actually in danger of running out, you know? I mean, it seems to me that there should be enough in there, you know, to stay up there for a few more hours. I mean, in case something happens. You know, anything could happen. Like, let's say New York got nuked or something. They're not going to want to land there, right? Of course not. They're going to want to go somewhere else. Change of plans. So, you don't put in just enough fuel to get you there. I mean, it's the first rule of logic. I don't understand it. And, I have to admit, though, you know, all the trepidation I have every time I get on an airplane, I never thought of that, you know? I thought of, you know, the old bombs in the tape recorders. I thought of crashing into something as you take off, crashing into something as you land. I never thought of running out of fuel in the middle, you know? Not in the middle, but towards the end. 15 miles to go. And what a strange set of stories is coming out of this, particularly the guy that that was found with cocaine stored in condoms in his large intestine. Or if it was his small intestine, it became his large intestine. I'm not exactly sure. But they were operating on him, and they found, that's exactly what they found, is in his large intestine, condoms packed with cocaine. As if the guy doesn't have enough problems, now he's going to be faced with some kind of drug case, you know. And I think, with something like that, you got to say, enough is enough. I mean, the poor schmuck, he's been through an airplane crash, and now he's going to have to face all this, you know, hostility from the DEA. I mean, come on. You're actually going to threaten the guy with jail after something like this? You know, when someone has obviously suffered, there's no reason to inflict further punishment on them. It's interesting. Really interesting. This is the most interesting plane crash I've ever heard of, if such a thing is possible. They say in the Times today, while it's uncertain what led to the crash of Avianca Flight 52 on Thursday evening, one fact is becoming clear. The Boeing 707 burned much more fuel than the pilots had originally planned. Pilot and flight dispatchers familiar with the 707 said yesterday that what may be unfathomable to most people, and I guess they're including me in there, a large jet's running out of fuel may not be so unfathomable after all. That has got to be the clumsiest sentence I've ever heard in the New York Times. I'm going to read it again, just so you can appreciate it. Pilot and flight dispatchers familiar with the 707 said yesterday that what may be unfathomable to most people, a large jet's running out of fuel, may not be so unfathomable after all. Can somebody who knows about these things please check and see if it's against some kind of law to use the word unfathomable twice in the same sentence? I'm sure it is. It should be if it isn't. Let's try to continue here. The most notorious example of an airliner running out of fuel was in 1978, when a United Airlines DC-8 did so 6 miles, even less, from the Portland, Oregon airport and crashed, killing 179 people. Tragedy is, I don't even remember that. There have been no such incidents in the United States since then, a spokesman for the National Transportation Safety Board said. The decision on how much fuel to carry on Flight 52 was made in Medellin, Colombia, where the plane departed for New York. Because the city has a high-altitude airport with relatively short runways, the pilot would have wanted to carry considerably less fuel than the plane's 23,855-gallon capacity so that the plane would weigh less and be able to lift off the ground safely. I see. Okay, that makes sense. Once the plane arrived at Kennedy International Airport, its older navigation equipment limited the pilot and how low he could safely descend, relying solely on his flight instruments. When the pilot reached that point Thursday night, he apparently still could not spot the runway. Following federal rules, he shoved the throttles forward, raised the landing gear, and began to maneuver the jet for another landing attempt. 8 minutes later, the plane crashed. Safety experts said that the aborted landing with all four engines racing at full power may have exhausted the plane's remaining fuel. The Avianca 707 was a long-range plane and could fly 6,000 miles nonstop. Pilots described the plane's fuel system as simple and reliable. 5 tanks, 2 in each wing, and 1 under the fuselage, pump fuel into the plane's 4 engines, but the fuel gauges, like those on most jets designed in the 50s and 60s, are notoriously inaccurate, pilot said. To compensate for the inaccurate gauges, the flight engineer, who is responsible for tracking how much fuel is on board, periodically calculates how much fuel remains by checking how much has been burned and subtracting that figure from the total on board when the plane took off. If a pilot is running low on fuel, he is supposed to alert air traffic controllers. The controller, in turn, will direct the plane to the head of the line waiting to land. But some pilots said that there is an unspoken reluctance among pilots to do so, since an FAA investigation and action by the airline may follow. But a former controller who is now an official with the aviation agency said that pilots are encouraged to alert controllers if they are critically low on fuel. If you have a fuel problem, you say something, he said. This isn't the time to be coy. And I have to agree with that. Coyness didn't win much in this case. So, that's the latest on that. Fascinating developments here, right here on Long Island, the focal point of the world. Our phone number is 632-6901 if you have anything to say, anything on your particular mind. I've had a busy week. In fact, I've had such a busy week that I'm not even going to be here next week or possibly even the week after that, but I'll get more into that later. Now, as I've said a couple of times, there isn't enough time in the day to do all the things that one needs to do. So occasionally, you have to double up and do two things at once. And that's what I have to do now. And I apologize for having to do this. But it's just the way it is. If you don't like it, that's just the way that is. I've got to return some phone calls. And I have to do it now. I mean, this is the only chance I'll get to do it, right? So It's not a local call, so I'm going to access my own long-distance company and make the call myself, and bill it to myself, and you folks can listen into the call if you want. I don't care. I mean, couldn't be that many people listening in the first place, so it doesn't really matter.
The authorization code or ID code you have dialed is invalid.
Oh, no.
2BZ.
I thought I paid them. Okay, all right, let's try the other one then. Oh, boy. This is embarrassing doing this on the air, but I guess it could happen to anybody, right? Yeah, we all know that. Our number is 632-6901 is our phone number. Forgive those little beeps. Wait a minute, it's ringing too soon. Why is it ringing now? Hello? What's going on here? It could be...
41-704. You have entered an invalid authorization or phone card number. Please check the...
All right. Okay. That's no good either. Hang on. We're not licked yet, folks. Okay. All right. We're going to get through this time. Okay. That's my other company. And that will... certainly get me through.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be processed. Please try again. For assistance...
I don't want assistance. I just want to make this call. Okay. I got an idea. How about if I just randomly guess? Yeah, let's try that. Figures. Okay, well, calling my friend Lauren. I haven't talked to her in a while. I'm returning her call.
Hello.
Hi, Lauren.
Who's this?
Eric.
Who?
It's Eric. I'm returning your call. How you doing?
Why are you returning my call?
You called me earlier. I'm returning your call. I'm very busy, and this is the first chance I've had to call you back. How you doing?
Do you know what time it is?
Yeah, in fact, I have a digital clock right here. It's 10:28.
It's like bedtime.
Yeah, what are you doing right now?
I'm sleeping.
Oh, that's really funny. I woke you up then, eh?
That's right.
Okay, well, that accounts for why you sound so serious. Well, what's it like sleeping at 10:28 on a Saturday?
What?
What's it like sleeping at this time of night?
It's great.
Well, that's good to know.
What we do here in Syracuse.
And you're in Syracuse.
Right.
Right, of course. Let me mention something else before I forget, in case you're wondering why I'm talking like an idiot. You're on the radio right now. I'm calling up live on the air, and I figured you'd like to be on the radio.
Great.
Yeah, so a double surprise for you, getting a call
what
from
if
me.
I don't want to be on the radio?
Well, there's not much choice then, because I'm on the radio, and I'm on until midnight, and what it boils down to, Lauren, is that if you want to talk to me, you have to talk to me now, because
okay.
I'm such a busy person, I have to do many things at once.
All right, hurry up.
Time sharing. Hurry up, yes, okay. How do I do that? Let's see.
Hi, Eric Corley.
What's new in your life?
Hi.
What's the weather like?
What? What's new in my life?
Yeah.
What?
What's new in your life, and what's the weather like?
The weather is, it's...
Really? That's fascinating.
It's out.
Uh-huh.
It's dark.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, things are fine in Syracuse, then. Lauren, how can an airplane run out of fuel?
You know, that's something, I don't know. How can it run out of fuel?
I don't know. That's what we're trying to figure out down here.
Is the gauge wrong? Did they forget to recall the plane? What is the problem? I don't know.
I think they're just being very foolish by letting it run so low, and I think there's several good lawsuits that are going to be filed this time.
I think there's drugs involved.
Well, there's always drugs involved. Did you hear about the guy that they operated on after this plane crash, that they found cocaine in his large intestine?
Right, in condom packets.
In condoms? Now, do you think that he should be charged with a crime after surviving an airplane crash? Doesn't you think that's just a tad bit unfair?
Yeah, I think it's a tad bit unfair.
I mean, they have a police officer stationed by his bed now.
Cut the guy some slack.
Yeah, that's what I say.
Right.
Anything else?
Eric, I can't be witty after my bedtime.
Yeah,
you don't understand.
Well, most people can't. I understand that. Well, let's see. How about this thing? Can you be smart?
Sure.
Okay.
Always.
I've got a book here, and this book is called Can You Pass These Tests?
Oh, no.
Yes.
Yeah? What kind of tests are
there? Well, there are all kinds of tests. Okay. Let's see. I should thank Jerry Zuckerman for lending me this book. I don't know why she has it. She's trying to be one of these things, maybe an air traffic controller, a captain, a lawyer, a chef, a Soviet citizen, one of those things. We'll have to...
Let's pick one.
Yeah, pick...
Okay.
Pick a category. I'll give you a list of all the different categories, then I will ask you a question, and I can ask some of our listeners questions, too,
okay,
and see if they can pass these tests.
Sure.
Air traffic controller, architect, ballroom dancing instructor, baseball umpire, Bible scholar, bookkeeper and accountant, citizen of the United States. I suspect that's the one we're going to spend the most time on.
Exactly.
Collector, dealer, decorator, copy editor and proofreader, elementary school teacher, engineer, history student, kitchen master, lawyer, maritime captain, nurse, pilot, police lieutenant and captain, psychology, abnormal. I guess abnormal psychology. Okay. Real estate salesperson, SAT, verbal and math. State trooper and ranger, taxi driver, trucker, wine master, and whiz kid. Whiz quiz. I don't know what that is for.
Let's go with pilot, because I think that would be appropriate.
It certainly would. Okay, let's open up to pilot, and I will ask you a question. You'll generally have a choice of four. Let's see what we got here.
I take pilot four points there, Mel.
Well, now let's see what kind of... Okay, we're talking about... Okay, you have a choice here.
Okay.
Glider.
Glider.
Dyslexic here. Glider, balloon, / airship, or other aircraft.
Other aircraft.
I figured you'd pick that. Other aircraft, then. All right. A person may not act as a crew member of a civil aircraft if alcoholic beverages have been consumed by that person within the preceding 8 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours, or 48 hours?
Let's go with 24 hours.
Sounds like a nice round figure, doesn't it?
It does there, Eric.
Okay, let's see. I'll have to figure out where the answers are first. That was question number 12. Okay, the answer is no person may act as a crew member of a civil aircraft within 8 hours after the consumption of any alcoholic beverage.
Well, there we have it.
Well, you flunked that one.
We have the answer to why a plane runs out of fuel.
How about this? Under what condition, if any, may a pilot allow a person who is obviously under the influence of intoxicating liquors or drugs to be carried aboard an aircraft? I'll repeat the question. Under what condition, if any, may a pilot allow a person who is obviously under the influence of intoxicating liquors or drugs to be carried aboard an aircraft? Here are the choices. A, under no condition. B, only if the person is a medical patient under proper care or in an emergency. C, only if the person does not have access to the cockpit or pilot's compartment. Or D, only if a second pilot is aboard. That's a tough one, isn't it?
Let's go with C.
Only if the person does not have access to the cockpit or pilot's compartment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds reasonable. What they're saying is, I guess, a drunk passenger. You know, is there a law against a drunk passenger? I think there is some kind of a law against that, actually.
Yeah, but come on, a lot of people drink before they get on a plane.
Obviously, under the influence of intoxicating liquors or drugs. I would agree with you, but I have a feeling they're going to say under no condition.
Okay.
Or, well, they should say only if the person is a medical patient under proper care or in an emergency. I mean, there's no reason why you can't say that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say either A or B. You say C. Let's find out. The answer is B. Except in an emergency, no pilot of a civil aircraft may allow a person who is obviously under the influence of intoxicating liquors or drugs, except a medical patient under proper care, to be carried in that aircraft.
Yeah, but what about the recently with the person who hijacked the airplane,
uh-huh,
who was acting crazy before he got on the plane, and everyone noticed, including the flight crew, that this man was acting absolutely wacko before he got on the plane? And he got on the plane, and he attempted to hijack the plane. I wonder, do you let a crazy person come on the plane?
Well, now, how do you determine that he's not under the influence of intoxicating liquors or drugs?
Right. Very, very true.
I mean, I think when they say he's obviously under the influence, you have to pretty much determine that using your eyes and ears.
Exactly.
So if somebody is insane, I guess you don't let them on a plane either.
Right.
That must be in there somewhere.
And how do you determine that?
Pick another. Let's get away from airplanes.
Okay.
Pick something else.
Ballroom dancer.
Yeah, hey, that's the one. Ballroom dancing.
Here we go.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's see now. Where do I start?
So, Eric, I see your show is doing very well.
Well, you know, these are no good. These aren't multiple choice. You don't want to have to give a short history of...
Welcome to Syracuse.
Well, yeah, actually, I'm about to tell the folks that I'm not going to be here next week.
Where are you going, Eric?
Well, you see, I'm going on this Midwest tour. I went on an East Coast tour a few years ago. Now I'm going on a Midwest tour, which will take me probably through Syracuse, which is where you live. Maybe I'll see you.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll see what happens. Other places such as Buffalo, Chicago, Milwaukee, where the Mr. Mike Juhas, we all know and love, lives.
Ah, yes.
And also St. Louis, I believe, and then all that godforsaken country in between.
Will you be arriving here before 10 p.m.?
I don't know. Are you suggesting that I call my show from up there? Because a lot of people...
No, I'm suggesting that I will not answer my door if it's after 10 p.m.
Yeah, well, answer your phone. We know you answer your phone after 10 o'clock.
Oh, this is true.
I don't think we can ask any ballroom dancing questions because they're not multiple choice.
Oh, that's too bad.
And unless you want to really go out on a limb and do some essay questions. Do you want to do that?
No.
No, I didn't think you did. let's pick something else.
Okay.
Engineer, no, that's kind of crazy. How about how about teacher?
Okay.
Humans are responsible for the extinction of other species primarily through A, environmental pollution, B, experimental hybridization, C, hunting and poaching, D, habitat destruction.
D, habitat destruction.
Okay, let's find out where the answers are this time. They make it very difficult sometimes. That was that question there. Okay. Correct response is D, habitat destruction. Humans have brought about the extinction of other species primarily by destroying their habitats, which are the physical and biological environments in which they live.
Right.
Examples of this destruction include logging and burning forests, building dams, and paving large areas with asphalt and concrete, i.e. Port Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
Environmental pollution, hybridization, hunting, and poaching have caused extinction of some species, but far fewer than has destruction of habitat. Well, just stick around. When we get through destroying the habitat, we'll work on the environmental pollution, you know.
That's right.
Whatever crazy birds still survive, live on ledges and things like that. I wish you could ask me a question. Well, I guess I can ask myself a question, just not look at the answer.
Yeah, I guess you can do that. But maybe I can come up with a question.
Okay.
Well, while Lauren is
thinking of a question...
I can't come up with a question.
How about this? In the United States, all citizens have the responsibility to A, petition the government, B, exercise freedom of religion, C, serve on juries, D, determine the rate of income tax.
C.
All citizens have the responsibility to serve on juries. I would agree with you there because the key word is responsibility.
Exactly.
And I think they have the right to petition the government, the right to exercise freedom of religion. I don't know about the right to determine the rate of income tax. I guess they have that right, too. God bless
right
them.
There, that's for sure.
serve on juries, yeah, that's a responsibility. Let's see if that's correct. Yes, you are correct. The U.S. Constitution guarantees the right to a fair trial in a court of law by a jury of one's peers. In order to ensure that this right will be provided, citizens have the responsibility to serve on a jury when called. Petitioning the government and exercising freedom of religion are rights, not responsibilities. Determining the rate of income tax is the responsibility of government, not of individual citizens. And for some reason, it then says balance beam exercises will help develop balance and coordination.
And this is true.
I don't know what the hell that is doing there. That must be a typesetting error or something, but it just suddenly says that.
So, Eric, are things good, Stony Brook?
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
School's about to start up here again. It's life is slowly being pumped into this place again, you know, artificial respiration and all that.
Right, right.
I think classes begin on Monday, right?
And I hear you're having a radiothon.
We're having a radiothon? Yes, in fact, at this very moment, even as I speak, the new transmitter is being installed in the transmitter room, and our hats off to all the engineering folks that have spent all day long up there.
Where is the new transmitter?
It's where the old transmitter is, on atop the Grad Chem building across the road here. And we are still looking into the plans to move it to a better site. And that's what Radiothon 90 is going to be all about. Would
above the Health Science Center be a possibility?
No, that won't work out because the problem when you have transmitters is radio waves can interfere with things. And if you put a radio transmitter, an FM radio transmitter on top of a hospital, there's a lot of potential things for it to interfere with.
Mm.
So that's not going to happen, but we're looking at other possibilities. That's something we'll talk about. But one thing
the radiothon was very exciting last year.
It was, and it's going to be even more exciting this year because
I feel a little upset that I will not be a part of the radiothon.
Well, maybe you will be. Maybe we'll drag you down here kicking and screaming.
Okay. I won't be kicking and screaming. I'll come down. It's a worthy reason.
A weeping and a wailing, then, or something like that.
Weeping and a wailing?
Yeah, but let me just make this brief announcement, which I am now authorized to make.
Sure.
I believe, 3 weeks, 3 weeks from tomorrow, there is a calendar here. How lovely. It's January. Let me look at February. February 18th. And the next day is a holiday. President's Day. Wait, what's President's Day again?
President's Day?
President's
what do we
Day.
Do on President's Day?
I don't know.
Do we have off?
That's one of those new ones I can't figure out.
Are banks closed? What
well,
do we do?
I think so because the little red thing is lit. Well, not lit, but it's a red letter day. No, that's not it either. It's, you know, the number is red on the calendar, which means it's a holiday.
Okay.
So that usually means that something is up. But anyway, the 18th is a Sunday. And that's always red, which I'm sure somebody could take to the ACLU or Supreme Court or something and say that's unconstitutional to make fall calendars have red Sundays.
Absolutely.
But that's something entirely different. On the 18th, on the 18th of February at exactly 2:30 p.m., WUSB will switch to its brand new transmitter.
Terrific. Now what do your listeners expect to hear that's different?
Hopefully it will sound a gosh darn bit better, you know?
It will be a gosh darn bit better. Now, will you be able to transmit a farther away?
Well, I'd like
to... Let's say if someone in... could someone in Montauk Point get WUSB?
That's kind of tricky, because Montauk's really far away, you know that.
It is very far away.
It's really far away.
Well, how far do you transmit now?
Right now we get... I would tell you right about... Sag Harbor or so is where you start to lose, where you really lose us out there. But there's all kinds of other interference, which is caused by where we currently are, which isn't a very high location. And possibly by the age of our old transmitter. We're going to find that out on the 18th when we switch to the new one.
You'll find out if the point of getting the new transmitter was what?
Sorry? Because the old one was dying.
Usually,
transmitters last about 10 years, and we've had this one since 1977, so that gives you an idea of how we've pushed it.
Well, it's lasted a long time. Where is the old transmitter going to go? In a little hall of fame transmitters?
We'll be able to keep that.
Office there, or where is it going to go?
We'll keep that as a backup. In case,
backup transmitter.
In case the new one gets destroyed by the wrath of God or something like that.
Right.
But also... what we'd like people to do is compare, you know, listen to the station now and be around on the 18th, listen then, and see if you can hear us better, if we sound clearer, if we sound louder, anything like that. We want to hear your comments, and the only way we can find out how good a job we're doing is to hear from our listeners. You can write to us, you can call us, you know what the number is, 632-6901. There are open lines, by the way. When there aren't open lines, that's when I'll go to the phone calls. Our address is WUSB State University at Stony Brook, Stony Brook, New York, 11794. And that's the truth. That really is our address. Lauren, I'm going to ask you to speak for a few seconds while I walk clear across to the other side of the room and switch the cassette tape over that I'm recording all this on?
Sure.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, yeah. And pledges their support.
I'm back.
Hi, Eric.
Okay, you didn't break any FCC rules, I hope.
Nope.
We have two open lines, 632-6901. Let's get some more people calling in. We'll go to some phone calls. How about a chef? You think you can be a chef?
Let's try that.
Okay. Salad greens with a distinct flavor require a pecan dressing, emulsified dressing, mild dressing, or hot dressing?
Can you repeat the question, please?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Salad greens with a distinct flavor require a piquant, I think I'm pronouncing that right, P-I-Q-U-A-N-T?
It's me.
Dressing, emulsified dressing, mild dressing, or hot dressing? Should be easy for you. I understand you used to work in a food establishment.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
The Purple Plum, is that still there?
As far as I know, it's still there.
It is. I would say emulsified.
Okay. Well, we'll see if you're worth your salt as a salad maker. Which did you say again?
Emulsified. Well, is that what you said?
No, it was close because it's the one right next to it, which is pecan, which is the one I can't pronounce.
What is that?
I don't know. It doesn't tell you. It just says number one is A. let's try something else. True false question. Okay.
Okay.
Cream cannot be added to boiling liquids and sauces. True or false?
False.
True.
Wow.
Ha.
Wow.
Let's see if I can get one more here.
Okay.
I hear touch tones. Why do I hear touch? You know what that means? That means the students are back on campus, and this phone system can't handle like more than 20 people on it at the same time without giving you all kinds of crosstalk.
Mm-hmm.
So every time somebody makes a call, we hear it. okay. Well. Which of the following desserts is not churned during freezing? A. Granite. B. Parfait. C. Spoum. That's like spoon with an M instead of an N. Or D. Sorbet, I believe is how you pronounce it.
Wow. I would say the first one.
Why?
I don't know, because I don't know what it is.
Well, you're very wrong on that, because it was the last one, sorbet.
Oh, I don't buy that.
Well, I don't think anybody does, which is why nobody knows the answer. okay, psychology, Lauren, you're going to love this.
Okay. How about we make this one more question, okay?
Okay, but I think you're going to like this one so much that you're going to ask for another one.
Okay.
Tina is a 26-year-old woman who is exploring whether she should break up with her boyfriend who hit her last night.
Mm-hmm.
In response to her question, should I break up with him, a client-centered therapist is probably apt to respond by A, nodding her head but saying nothing, B, telling the client how much the therapist respected the client, C, asking Tina to try to remember her dreams from last night, D, saying, you're trying to decide if you want to end this relationship.
A.
Nodding her head but saying nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you say that?
Because this woman is just telling what has happened and is trying to make a decision, and it's her decision. And I would think,
I would say she was the last one saying you're trying to decide if you want to end this relationship, only because that's what that's what therapists seem to always do.
And you said a client-centered therapist?
Yeah. What's a client-centered therapist?
Probably what you said, the D one would try to basically enlighten the person, the client, on what they're trying to say.
Uh-huh.
Tell them, reiterate it.
There goes another call. Okay, let's see if you're correct or if I'm correct. I am correct.
Uh-huh.
Saying you're trying to decide if you want to end this relationship. Wow.
There we have it.
That's pretty amazing. Well, listen, Lauren, I'll probably see you in about a week or so. And
awesome. Well, thanks for calling. Sorry. It's nice to hear your voice.
Is there a message that you want to give to the entire island of Long, which is probably listening now?
Sure. Listen to one another.
Listen to one another.
Yeah, listen to one another. Don't be judgmental. And
but how do you listen to one another if more than one person is talking at once?
And we'll be a better place for it.
I suppose.
Yeah.
Stop building so many buildings. How about that, too?
That's terrible.
Yeah.
It's stop really terrible.
Building buildings and parking lots and, you know, it's amazing. They're building something else on the Wisconsin Highway now in a place that I didn't even know had woods.
Mm.
It's like they say, wow, look at this. Three trees. Let's put something there, you know.
It's scary. I mean, how many video stores can you have?
I don't know. Video stores,
how many little mini malls can you have, you know, along this continent?
I don't know.
I don't understand this.
I'm bloody well fed up with it.
But, you know, it feels good to be off of Long Island because it feels really claustrophobic to be on Long Island.
Well, how is it up there? It's a lot more spacey?
Yeah, a lot more.
Yeah. That's because you have land all over the place. Well, that's sort of what I'm doing next week. You know, I can't express the feeling that I get when I get into a car and realize I can just keep driving and not stop.
Mm.
And just, you know, the road lies ahead and you can just keep going on that road.
Wonderful feeling.
Taking it wherever you want to go.
It's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah, it really is. And it's an even better feeling to do it.
And unfortunately, we'll never feel that on Long Island ever again.
No, but Long Island is a good starting point for that.
Hmm.
You know, you sort of launch into the city and then use the gravity of the city to propel you outwards toward the rest of the country.
That was beautiful.
I like the way I said that, didn't I?
Yeah, that was beautiful. So that's what you'll be doing next week then?
Yeah. Yeah, next Saturday probably, Saturday afternoon, which explains why I won't be here.
Well, we'll drive safe.
And I'll probably be still doing that the next Saturday after that, and I might even be doing it the one after that too. I'll probably be on my way back because I want to be here for the transmitter being turned on and all that kind of thing.
Right, right.
So, well, Lauren, it was great hearing your voice.
Well, give my best to all.
Okay, and I want to thank you for calling.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
I used a Mike Uhas trick there. I thanked her for calling when I actually called her. Right about now, she'll be saying, wait a minute. He called me. I didn't call him. And then she'll wonder, did I call him or did he call me? If I called him, that's going to be an expensive phone bill. Why did I call him? Am I mad? Those are the kind of things that that we set off in people's minds. Our number is 632-6901, and I understand that it's a real pain to sit there for half an hour, but if brain damage isn't the motivating factor for sitting on a phone for half an hour, then what is, you know? Doesn't cost a dollar a minute, doesn't cost a penny a minute, doesn't cost anything until we pick up the phone, and it probably costs very little, too. 632-6901. We can ask you some of these amazing questions. All right, if I see one more call come in, then I will start picking up the phone. I don't mean to be obnoxious, but supposing they're silly calls, you know, I'll just go through them so fast and then I'll be in a bad mood. Yes, I'd like to read some of the things that you have to know to become a citizen of this country. And these are things that people actually have to learn before they can even be considered to be a citizen here. I think they assume that... I got two more calls. Okay, great. I'm going to go right to the phones then. We'll get to these citizen questions in a little while. If you think you're up to it, if you think you're up to being a citizen of these here United States, simply say, Eric, I accept the challenge. Give me a question, and we will do just that. 632-6901. Good evening.
Hi, Eric.
How you doing?
It's strange that you picked up this call because...
You're the first call.
I was actually the last person to call in.
Well, that means the first call hung up and you took his place.
Oh, that's...
I have no way of knowing, though, you know.
It's pretty damn neat.
You're just a little red light on a board.
Yeah, I guess so.
So, you think you're capable of being a citizen of this country?
I want to take the Russian citizen test. Is it in there?
How do you know that was in there?
I did it earlier.
Do you have it? Oh, I did mention it. You're right. Okay. let's see. Okay, I'm just trying to find my way around this. What was the exact phrasing of that?
The exact phrasing of what?
Of that particular category. Because I'm looking for it, and I can't seem to find it.
Citizenship, perhaps.
Citizenship of the United States. History of the U.S. and the USSR, but I don't think that's it.
Hmm.
Hold on, I'll find it. Okay, I think... Well, why don't you tell me what's on your mind while I'm looking for it?
Actually, about the airplane crash.
Yeah,
about how they couldn't tell how much fuel is left.
Right.
You see, it's an older airplane, and when they built that airplane, the fuel gauges weren't as sensitive as they are now. And it could have said that there were 4,000 pounds of fuel left, because airplanes use this thing called aviation gas.
Right.
Yes, they can't get off the ground on anything else. And it could have said there were 4,000 pounds that left, but there were really none. And it wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Well, I mean, that's pretty unforgivable, if you ask me.
Yeah, but you try to, weigh fuel in midair in an airplane that's moving really fast.
Well, I don't want to hear excuses, it's the kind of thing that should be mastering, you know?
Well, that's just the way that the fuel tanks work on the older planes. And since it's not an American airline, U.S. registered airline, I'm not sure that they have to comply with all the FAA regulations.
Okay. I found something here, I think. How about history? You feel confident about history?
Russian history?
This isn't Russian history. There's a Russian section in this book, but it's set up in a weird way. I don't actually see any questions. I don't really know what the point of it is.
The Russians don't like people to ask questions, or at least...
Maybe not.
Them.
Well, this is history, and it's kind of fun. I'm going to give you the question that more college students answered this question wrong than any others in the whole exam. Only 16% answered it correctly.
I might get it right, considering I'm not in college.
That's true. Yeah, you do have that on your side.
Yeah.
All right. Let's give you the question. Let's see how you do. Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Sure? You sure?
Throw it at me, Eric.
Okay. The Korean and Vietnam Wars were similar in all of the following respects, except A, warnings were voiced by some respected military leaders against the United States becoming bogged down in a land war in Asia. B, domestic support of the war declined as the possibility of a quick and decisive U.S. military victory grew remote. C, United States troops were engaged against an essentially guerrilla enemy. Or D, the war remained limited rather than leading to war directly between or among the major powers.
Okay, both had the similarities except for which one? Could you read A again?
Yeah, A was the Korean and Vietnam Wars was similar in all of the following respects except A, warnings were voiced by some respected military leaders against the United States becoming bogged down in a land war in Asia. Do you want me to read the other ones?
Yeah, that might help.
B, domestic support of the war declined as the possibility of a quick and decisive U.S. military victory grew remote. C, United States troops were engaged against an essentially guerrilla enemy. And D, the war remained limited rather than leading to war directly between or among the major powers.
I'd have to go with D, because during the Korean War, American troops did fight Chinese troops. And Soviet troops in some cases.
Uh-huh.
I'd have to go with D.
Okay. That was used as an example, and unfortunately they didn't give the answer right in that particular part. Hopefully they give it in the back. I'm looking for it right now.
I see.
That'd be very terrible if they don't give the answer to this. Oh, boy. Well, why don't you explain why you thought that was the case? Ah, I found it. Okay. It's question number 38 in here. Now, what was...
I said D.
You said D, which was the war remained limited rather than leading to war directly between or among the major powers.
Yes.
And the correct answer is... I guess it's the one with the star next to it, which would be C, right?
And what was C?
C was the United States troops were engaged against an essentially guerrilla enemy. This was the hardest question for students whose interest in Korea may be waning with the passage of time. Older students were better informed, 20% correct, than those under 20 years old, 16%. In wrongly choosing B, students overlooked, for instance, Republican calls for ending the war. Blacks did as well as whites on this, and on a question about when African slaves came to America, the only two questions on which they did as well as whites. They don't explain why C is the correct answer, though, unfortunately. I don't like this section.
Neither do I.
No, it's not good at all.
Pretty lame section.
Let's go to the taxi driver section. How's that? Can you handle a taxi driver question?
Oh, I hope so.
All right. You are driving in what you consider a very comfortable temperature for a summer day in New York. You are not using your air conditioner because you feel there is no need to. Your passenger asks you to roll up your window and turn on the air conditioner. A. You explain that you don't think it is necessary. B. You inform the passenger that the air conditioner is an additional expense. C. You comply with their request and turn on the air conditioner.
Well, I've never actually taken a taxi, but it would probably be C, because, you know, the guy wants to get a big tip, and it doesn't really cost that much to run an air conditioner.
Well, that's correct. C was the right answer.
Oh, my God, I could be a taxi driver.
Yeah.
I fall in hard times. God forbid.
Let's see. After you pick up a young man in Chinatown, he asks you to drive him uptown to the Museum of Natural History. After only a few blocks, the young man suddenly says, "Stop. I want to get out here." A. You don't stop and tell the young man that he hasn't reached his destination yet. I've never seen that on TV. Wait, I got to get out. No, you're not where you were supposed to be yet. B. You tell the young man that you think he must be taking drugs to act so crazily. Or C, you stop the taxi and ask the passenger for the fare on the meter. Well, these are pretty damn obvious. I mean, obviously it's C.
I think so.
Let's try one more here. After waiting in line for a long time, you finally reach the intersection and see a woman traffic agent who is directing traffic. Just as you are about to cross the intersection,
run her over.
The traffic agent motions for you to stop. How do you react?
I run her over.
A, you yell through your window, "You idiot, I've waited long enough." B, although you are angry, you stop and say nothing. C, you stop and consider whether you should ignore the woman and continue through the intersection.
Well, if I were a real taxi driver, it would either be A or C. But, you know, since I do want to pass this test,
I can't believe this is an actual test, you know. I mean, this is, it's funny, but it's obvious what the right answers are, you know.
I can imagine these taxi drivers, you know, actually future taxi drivers, spending long hours on taxi exams, you know? Maybe if they saw the, you know, the TV show by the same name.
Yeah.
That might help. Study materials, yeah.
That's incredible. Okay, which major attraction is not in Queens?
What?
Which major attraction is not in Queens? A, Shea Stadium, B, Sheep's Head Bay, C, Aqueduct Racetrack, or D, Flushing Meadow Park?
Am I right?
You don't know, do you?
It's B.
Oh, I didn't hear you. B is correct, yes. Sheep's Head Bay is
Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn, not Queens.
In south part of Brooklyn, in fact.
Right. You know, it gets a bit tougher, though, because they ask you, match the Manhattan neighborhood or special area with the number description, and then they give you Soho, Sutton, Tudor City, Theater District, West Side, Washington Heights, Little Italy, Yorkville, Whitehall, and you have to match it with... you know, with the actual street locations. And that can be kind of tricky. Unless you're a seasoned New Yorker. And I know quite a few taxi drivers that couldn't do that.
Mm.
Or I don't know them, but I...
Well, yeah, you know what you could... What would help, probably,
them.
Is if you had CompSat feeds with little video monitors directly on the dashboard, or even better, on a heads-up display.
Uh-huh.
On the windshield.
Uh-huh.
You know, think about that. You are here within 3 feet, you know?
That's not a bad idea. I'm going to give you one more question, and I'm going to move on to another call. And we have one line open, 632-6901. A passenger who is very impatient tells you that you are purposely driving slowly in order to make the fare higher. He decides to tell you, I love the way they phrase this, he decides to tell you that you are a thief. A, you tell the man to shut up because he doesn't know what he's talking about. B, you explain that you are driving as quickly and safely as possible, and you ask the man why he feels he has been cheated. C, you tell the man that, in caps, nobody calls you a thief. And you threaten to hit him.
Oh.
I don't even have to look at the answer to that one.
Yeah, it's definitely C.
Definitely C, yes.
Yeah.
Nobody calls you a thief in Manhattan. Well, I want to thank you for calling.
Okay.
And I hope that you've come away from this a bit brighter.
I don't want anyone to consider me a thief for stealing their time on the air.
No, nobody would say that.
Such a precious commodity.
Okay, well, have a good night.
Oh, by the way, wait, I was at the radio station today, in fact.
You were?
This afternoon.
Ooh.
At about 4 o'clock.
That was a pretty scary thing to do.
Yeah, I went to the library, but it wasn't open, even though I called and the answering machine said it was. You know, the phone mail message?
Well, there's plenty of phone mail messages on this campus.
Well, there was one of them, and it was to the library, supposedly, and it said the library is open on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Yeah, but this isn't a Saturday. This is a intercession Saturday, so it's all crazy.
I was there. I was there for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And
well, it was closed. How could you be there for a long time?
Because I had to wait a little while until I left.
I see.
And I walked around a while, and I saw, you know, the infamous bridge.
The bridge to somewhere.
Somewhere or other. And the stairs that don't go anyplace.
Okay, I'm going to give you one more question. Because
you go somewhere,
this is a good
but they
one.
Hit a wall, and they hit a door somewhere
I'm
else.
I'm
going to
give
no
you...
handle on the other end of the door, so you can't go back in.
I'm going to give you one more question, all right? Then I'm going to let you go. This will prove if you're a New Yorker. Ready?
Yes.
All of these Manhattan streets are two-way except A, 23rd Street, B, 34th Street, C, 42nd Street, D, 50th Street.
Huh. I'd have to say 34th Street, because it's a miracle to go in any direction in New York City.
I can tell you right away you're wrong, because that's 34th Street is right next to Penn Station. That's a two-way street.
But my point does have some validity.
It has no validity whatsoever. The answer is 50th Street.
Yeah, but think about it.
I
want to
thank you for participating, and hope you're not a sore loser, and come away from this with a bit of experience. 632-6901. Good evening. Wake up.
Oh.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh,
Yes, you finally made it.
I want to ask some of those questions.
Okay, what do you want?
Well, what is there?
Let's see. Let's go through the topics one more time.
All right.
Okay, it's fine. A table of contents here. Okay, we got air traffic controller, architect, ballroom dancing instructor, baseball umpire, Bible scholar, bookkeeper and accountant, citizen of the United States, collector, dealer, decorator, copy editor, proofreader, elementary school teacher, engineer, history student, wine master, trucker, taxi driver, state trooper and ranger, real estate salesperson, abnormal psychology, police lieutenant and captain, pilot, nurse, maritime captain, lawyer, or kitchen master.
Give me the kitchen master.
Kitchen master. Okay, kitchen master here. Okay, what is the name of the base sauce used when making Mornay sauce? You asked for it. A, chicken velouté. B, bechamel. Or C, cream sauce. Forgive me if I mangled the pronunciation on any of that.
The last one.
The last one?
Yeah.
Nope, it's the second one, which I'm not going to say again.
All right, go.
You want another one?
Yeah.
Okay. The best marrow bones in a beef carcass are to be found in the A, full forequarter, B, shoulder, C, rump and loin, or D, butt.
What?
I don't believe that's an actual term. Well, I guess it is. Yes, you're right on that. It is the butt.
Right.
It is the butt. Let me give you a true false here.
All right.
Okay. Cream. Oh, wait, I asked that already. How about oxidation of fresh fruit for salad preparations may be prevented by placing the fruit in a water and salt solution. True or false?
Damn.
That's a tough one. Trips up a lot of people.
Let me think. False.
I'm afraid it's true.
Oh, man.
I want to thank you for playing, though.
All right.
All right.
Thanks.
This is developing into a game show. 632-6901. It's 10 minutes after 11 o'clock, and this is Brain Damage. Oh, we've got plenty of open lines now, so feel free to give us a call. You don't have to answer a stupid question if you don't want to. You can spout your various rhetoric. That's what we're here for. Good evening.
Good evening, Eric.
How you doing?
Okay.
What's up?
Well, I believe the section you're looking for with the Soviet history students is tucked in the back of the American history students section.
Okay, this is Jerry, the person that lent me the book, so I guess you would know where it is. The American history, U.S. history, right?
That's right.
It's tucked in the back.
Not really a series of questions.
No, it's not. I was looking at that, and I can't see any questions in here to ask.
So what they do is they give you a very good idea of what you would have to know through each grade.
Uh-huh.
And that alone is astonishing.
You think I should read that, eh?
Well, sure.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
All right, well, we'll all gain an understanding of what, this is what you would have to know if you were a Soviet student.
That's right, minimally what you would have to know for a history course of American history.
Okay. Well, folks, sit back and listen to this. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
If you're thinking of becoming a Soviet student, it may not be as easy as you think. Okay. Diplomats from the Soviet Union assigned to the United Nations in New York want their children to be educated as they would be in their own homeland, of course. To answer that need, the Soviet mission runs a school for the elementary and intermediate grades staffed by Soviet teachers. The history teachers there prepared the following outline to reveal what aspects of U.S. history a child in the Soviet school system would be expected to learn. Like Harvard's exams, Soviet exams seldom use multiple choice or fill-in test formats requiring brief single-fact answers, so no answers are provided here. Unlike the Harvard exams, however, the trick here is to compare your own knowledge of this subject by projecting yourself into another cultural and political dimension, rather than projecting your knowledge of your own culture and politics into different periods of time in their evolution. Sounds pretty spacey, eh? The elementary and secondary education system in the USSR is similar to our own in its grade/age-level divisions. Elementary, grades 1 to 4, ages 6 to 10, pre-secondary, grades 5 to 9, ages 11 to 15, and secondary, grades 10 to 11, ages 16 to 17. The curriculum is based first upon general fields of study and then split into separate disciplines within each field. The goals of elementary and secondary schooling are the preparation for work and the well-rounded and harmonious development of each student's capacities as an individual to think independently and energetically. Let's try to get to some questions here. Okay, An 11-year-old is expected to answer oral and written questions that require a knowledge of, for example, the culture of ancient India and China, the written language, scientific knowledge, art, the Greek language, its meaning in our times, school in Greece, the Olympic Games, theater in Greece, the significance of the theater in the lives of the Greeks, Greek architecture and sculpture, science, the development of the study of the natural sciences and of history, the contribution of the ancient Greeks to the progress of world culture, and Roman culture from the end of the Republic to the beginning of the Empire, including literature, architecture, sculpture, the calendar, the art of oratory, and the influence of Greek on Roman culture. Okay, and that's fifth grade, by the way, folks. An 11-year-old, fifth grade. Sixth grade, actually, I guess that's a bit above our fifth grade, because I think I was nine when I was in fifth grade. Sixth grade, the history of the Middle Ages, the Byzantine Empire, education, monuments, architecture, representational art, mosaics, frescoes, icon painting, the culture of the countries of the Caliphate, the development of the sciences, astronomy, mathematics, medicine, geography, and arts, architecture, decorative handicrafts. Seventh grade, Russian history, the entire school year is devoted to the study of Mother Russia from ancient times to the mid-17th century. In later grades, students continue to study Soviet history parallel to their study of the history of the outside world. Okay, specific questions asked of a 15-year-old Soviet student would probably include A. Why was English colonization, in contrast to that of the French, carried out by the masses? Can anyone answer that? All right. B. From your study of the Declaration of Independence, establish and prove this position. The principles voiced in the Declaration of Independence were directed against the feudal orders and against the colonial yoke. And while you're thinking about that one, analyze and substantiate the historical developments of American imperialistic policies exemplified by the announcement by U.S. President McKinley concerning the Philippines. Pretty shocking, huh? In the 10th grade, students focus on the background of contemporary world affairs. They are expected to demonstrate their command of the following facts and developments. 1. The principal capitalist countries after World War II. 2. The role of the United States as the chief imperialist power. 3. The economy after World War II. 4. Anti-communism in the United States. 5, foreign and domestic policies under Eisenhower and Truman. 6, the creation of the military blocs, the wars in Korea and Indochina. 7, Soviet-American negotiations in the 1970s. 8, the policies of the United States in its current stage. Or 9, the U.S. Communist Party in the United States. Now, I imagine quite a bit of that has probably changed over the last couple of years, but it's still pretty fascinating to think of all that stuff that they have to know. Scary. Think of all the things that we don't know. Well, let's go to the U.S. citizen section. These are questions that you need to know when you're becoming a citizen, which most of us have already done when we were born, but some of us have to do it the hard way. I'm looking for a particular question. Well, I'll find it. I will find it. Let's take some more calls. 632-6901. Good evening. Hello?
Yes. They dumped the fuel from the plane.
I didn't hear what he said. Which makes it kind of pointless. I don't know if anybody understood that, but I didn't. Speak in a normal tone of voice next time and we'll understand you. Good evening.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Could you go through the list of categories again?
The whole list?
Yeah, well, not the whole list, just like...
Tell me what your general field is, and I'll find something that you like.
American history.
American history. Okay. Maybe there's something in this U.S. citizen...
Can't believe it in the air.
Yeah, it does happen sometimes. Okay. Okay, you want history, eh? How about some regular short answer questions? Remember that phrase used to always like make me freeze in school. Short answer quiz.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Okay. When was the Constitution adopted?
1787.
Very good.
Thank you.
Very good. You don't have an actual date, do you?
No, not really.
How about a month?
No.
A season?
Summer.
Well, September 17th, yeah, it just squeezed in there, actually. It was drafted and signed September 17th, 1787, by the Continental Congress.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I remember those guys. You don't have a Congress like that anymore. And then submitted to the 13 states for ratification. Rhode Island was the last state to sign it in 1790.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's see. Ah, here's the question I was looking for. Can a communist become a U.S. citizen?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No, there is a law specifically preventing anyone who is a member of a communist party from being naturalized as a citizen of the United States.
Oh.
Shocking, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'll give you another chance. Let's see now. Okay. No, that's no good. I don't like that one. What wars has the United States fought since the Civil War?
Spanish-American War.
Yeah.
World War One.
Yeah.
World War Two.
Yeah.
The Korean War.
Yeah.
The Vietnam War.
That's very good. You got them all in the right order, too. But the Vietnam War is unofficial.
Oh, yeah. It's a police action.
It's ridiculous.
I know.
Okay. Tell all those people that died over there. Well, tell the ones that came back anyway that it wasn't really a war. Sure they'll appreciate that.
Died for nothing.
How many U.S. presidents have been killed in office, and who were they?
I don't know. I couldn't answer that one. Well, been killed or just died?
No, killed.
Killed? There was Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
There's one more. I forget his name. Oh, yeah, Kennedy.
Yeah, there's two more in between those two.
I don't know.
Famous cartoon. You gotta use American legends here to get the answer sometimes. Famous cartoon involving a cat.
Garfield.
Very good. James A. Garfield. I was afraid you were going to say Heathcliff or something. okay, and there's one more, and I don't have a name that matches this anywhere.
I don't know.
William McKinley.
Oh, yeah, I know. Now I know.
Okay, how about this? How about this? Only one U.S. president has ever been impeached. Who was he?
Nixon. No, he resigned. Sorry. Would it be Johnson?
That's right. What was Johnson's first name?
Andrew.
That's right. Was he, I guess this, what eventually happened? Let's put it that way. Did anything happen afterwards? Obviously something did, or I wouldn't be asking this.
Did anything happen afterwards?
After he was impeached. There's like an asterisk next to this thing here.
Did he kill himself? Or?
No. He was later acquitted.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Oh, how about, you know anything about trucking?
Well, I know that it involves driving trucks.
Very good. Okay, you pass. No. I meant, what's a good question here? Okay, a driver, and this is something I should know because I'm going to be doing a lot of driving in the next couple of weeks. A driver is not generally allowed to drive for more than A, 6 hours following 8 straight hours off duty, B, 8 hours following 8 straight hours off duty, C, 10 hours following 8 straight hours off duty, or D, 12 hours following 8 straight hours off duty.
C.
10 hours following 8 straight hours off duty?
Yep.
Let's see if that's right. Hold on. That would be under the motor carrier safety section, and it was question number 46. And you said C?
Yep.
You're right.
I am.
You have some knowledge of trucking, do you?
I can be a truck driver now.
Okay. How about this? No motor vehicle shall be operated out of gear, A, except when fuel must be saved, B, except on hills which are less than 20 degrees, C, except when it is necessary for stopping or shifting gears, or D, except when the vehicle's speed is under 25 miles per hour.
D?
B, except on hills which are less than 20 degrees.
C.
Sorry?
B, as in cat.
Oh, you said C, except when it is necessary for stopping or shifting gears?
Yeah.
You're correct.
Oh?
You're 2 for 2 on trucking. I think we're finding people's professions here. Okay, how about this? When a motor vehicle cannot be stopped off the traveled part of the highway, the driver A must keep driving, B may stop but shall get as far off the traveled part of the highway as possible, C may stop but shall make sure that the vehicle can be seen as far as possible to its front and rear, or D, may stop if the driver has to, but should do both B and C above.
Could you repeat the question again?
Oh, boy, I was afraid to say that. when a motor vehicle cannot be stopped off the traveled part of the highway, the driver A must keep driving. B may stop, but shall get as far off the traveled part of the highway as possible. C may stop, but shall make sure that the vehicle can be seen as far as possible to its front and rear. Or D may stop if the driver has to, but should do both B and C above, which I guess really means B and C above.
Yeah. A?
Must keep driving. I would tend to believe that as well, but it's wrong. It's D.
It is?
Yeah.
I'll forget truck driving, man.
Yeah. That's a stupid one, too. Anyway, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
And thanks for doing so well.
All right.
I'm getting pretty sick of these questions here, that's for sure. 632-6901. Something else happened, which I'm going to get to in a minute, but let's take another call first. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay, you're on a speakerphone.
No, let me turn the radio down, maybe.
Okay. Won't sound like you're on a hollow speakerphone, then. Here we go.
How's that?
That's much better.
Oh, how are you?
Okay.
I like those cab driver questions.
Okay.
I drove a cab for a while.
Did you? Okay, let's give you some cab
driver. They missed some questions that I would have brought up. Such as, what do you do when a passenger throws up on your back?
What do you do?
These are real-life situations that I occurred.
Wait,
I do?
Don't they have like a little barrier or something?
No, not. I worked out here, not in the city.
It's oh.
Different now, you know.
You see, you get those fringe benefits in the city.
Yeah, it's different, you know. Well, I would have to say, you know, force him to clean it up and demand extra money. I did. All right, and then how about this? What do you do if a passenger passes out stone cold drunk? In your car, and he cannot be revived by any means.
Well, what did you do?
What did I do?
Yeah.
This is what I did. I knew the street the guy was going to because the bartender told me. So what I did was, and he was a lot heavier than me, I'm only about 140 pounds, I dragged the guy out of the car and I put him on a stoop anywhere in the street. And I didn't even get any money out of the guy. And the next day he gave me 20 bucks because by sheer luck I put him on his house.
Well, I mean, I imagine he would have been happy if...
He was shaking my head. He's like, I don't know how you got me home, but thanks a lot, man. And he gave me $20 for a $3 call.
How did he find you?
He knew where I worked.
That's great.
I guess they told him that the bar... Because, you know, it's a terrible habit bartenders have, is that around 4 in the morning, they push off all their, more or less the dregs of humanity onto the cab drivers. They'll call up and say, oh, I've got, you know... Come down and pick me up at this bar. When you get there, it's not who was calling. It's some drunken oaf or oafs who, or somebody who's totally incapacitated.
Yeah, but
pulling them off on you.
Isn't it better than them trying to drive themselves?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, something should be
driving them.
Right. Well, something should be worked out with the cab companies, obviously.
Yes, it should be. No, I agree. You know, you do have to put up with a lot of nonsense and. You know, it's an interesting job, I'll tell you. Driving a cab it can be really, you meet some situations. And how about this one? If someone offers you sexual favors for the ride instead of money.
Well, how do you declare that on the tax form?
I didn't declare that one. But I don't want to go into that.
I guess that answers that question for you then. Let me ask you a question here then, okay? This is number 16. Since your brother has recently opened a business in New York, he has asked you to hand out advertisements in your taxi to all of your passengers. What do you decide to do? A. You think it's all right so long as you're not too demanding. B. You remember that using your taxi for such a service is a violation of the rules and regulations. C. You tell your brother that you will do it, but only if he pays you for it.
Well, I guess the answer is B,
you
violation of the rules and regulations.
I love the way they phrase it. You remember that using your taxi. I mean, they wouldn't put that in there if it wasn't a violation. So
but come on, I mean, somebody's going to pay you. But no, I guess in the city it's probably a lot different. You know, they'll probably make all kinds of trouble for you if you break some rules and they actually catch you. Like, remember when they had that dress code thing in the city with the cab drivers? They had to wear, you know, nice shirts and all that. And they all got out and protested. Mayor Koch put it through. The cab drivers had to dress nicely.
Right.
You know, and not wear, they couldn't wear a T-shirt or a cut-off sleeve shirt anymore.
So what finally happened?
I think it didn't go through in the end because, like, they were all out, you know. They got out in force, you know, just about every cabbie in the city.
Because, you know, a taxi is pretty much your home for a good part of the day.
I would say it is. You know, I used to drive sometimes, you know, 17, 18 hours. You know, waiting for the morning shift to get in because those bombs were always late.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I'd be there sometimes from 4 p.m. till 9:30, 10 in the morning, sometimes noon. You know, but I did have a good time while I worked there.
Let me ask you this question: you may not know this since you weren't a taxi driver in the city, but this looks like one that might possibly not be an obvious one. A driver at LaGuardia Airport is waiting on a taxi line for over 2 hours. When he finally reaches the head of the line, the PA dispatcher gives him a passenger who only wants to go to the next terminal building. The driver, A, may refuse the fare and ask for the next passenger going to Manhattan. B, must accept the fare. C, may refuse the fare but must then leave the airport. D, may refuse the fare and go back to the end of the line.
I have to say, you may refuse the fare but go back to the end of the line.
Okay, that sounds logical to me, but I suspect that, you know, it's must accept the fare, which really doesn't seem all that nice. Yes, must accept the fare.
Must accept it, huh?
All right.
So you got any history student questions?
Oh, yeah, tons of them.
Yeah, try my hand at
U.S. history, you want, eh?
You got a world history?
Let's see if I have world history here. History student, U.S., U.S. history at Harvard... Hang on. I don't see world history as much as I see U.S. history. I'm looking for lawyer, air traffic controller. Probably, I think U.S. history is the closest I can get right now.
Oh, I'll try that.
All right. President
Jeopardy here.
Here we go. President Harry S. Truman's decision to have the atomic bomb dropped on Japan was influenced by all the following considerations except A, the desire to counter Republican charges that the Democrats were the party of appeasement and defeat. B, desire to avoid the large number of casualties that would occur in the United States invasion of Japan. C, desire to prod the Soviet Union to be more cooperative as it began to formulate its post-war plans. Or D, difficulty of devising a test demonstration of the atomic bomb that would unfailingly impress the Japanese government.
A, I would have to say.
A, desire to counter Republican charges.
Politics question.
I don't know. I would say it was C, desire to prod the Soviet Union.
Except it was that did not influence.
Yeah,
the
all these influences.
Definitely,
except.
That was that he wanted to impress Stalin with the bomb.
Yeah,
that's a fact. Oh yeah, that was probably the main reason they dropped it because you know at the end of the war, if you look at the forced dispositions in Europe, the Russians had about 350 divisions in Europe to our 80, and not only that, at that time they built the best tanks in the world, second to the Germans. But in a lot of ways, the Russians, you know, they were ahead of their time as far as, like, tanks were, and they sure had lots of them.
I guess I'm just being
it was A,
moralistic.
I would say the party politics thing.
Uh-huh.
But because they couldn't, because I had read a good book by John Toland about that, that got into that. And
it's hard to
about
believe,
a
though.
Demonstration, but there was, like, a lot of complications involved, and they said, what if we have the test and this thing doesn't work? Because that was, like, a big consideration. It was like, you know, we could blow off, we could say, yeah, we have this bomb here, look, and if something goes...
Sorry, I was on the other side of the room. Okay, so let's find out what the answer to that was. It was question 37, and the answer was... A, you were right, but D was the most popular wrong choice, D being difficulty of devising a test demonstration of the atomic bomb that would unfailingly impress
no, they did think about that.
Japanese government. Yeah, apparently reflecting a continued disbelief in the Truman administration's rationale for not making a test drop. C has gained increasing acceptance among historians after first being propounded by the new left historians. 51% of male students knew A, so actually a majority of people got that right. You want another history question?
Sure, what the hell.
Okay, let's see what we got here. Hold on, I want to find a good one here. Oh, boy, he's a tough, I don't know. These are also kind of dull questions, too. I want something kind of exciting. No, that's not good either. Okay, I'm just going to pick one at random. The Articles of Confederation were most severely criticized in the 1780s for their lack of A, a plan for the admission of new states, B, equal representation of the states in Congress, C, a Bill of Rights, or D, a national taxing power.
D, a national taxing power.
That's right. Hey, pretty good. The Articles of Confederation did provide for equal representation of the state in Congress, and it was the Constitution rather than the Articles that was criticized for its lack of a Bill of Rights. Student performance paralleled their handling of an earlier question in which only 28% knew that the Constitution authorized Congress to regulate interstate commerce. Well, since you seem to be on a hot streak here, let's see if we can find another one for you. The aim of the Monroe Doctrine, as it was proclaimed in 1823, was to A, prevent... That's something I'm going to get to in a second. Was to A, prevent the outbreak of democratic revolutions in Latin America. B, guarantee preferential trading rights to the United States in Latin America. C, secure a territorial outlet for American slavery in Latin America. Or D, ensure that the United States, rather than Europe, would be the dominant power in the Western Hemisphere.
I would have to say, the pause between B and D, I would have to say it would be, what was it, B again, please?
Guarantee preferential trading rights to the United States in Latin America.
Oh, I'd have to, this is close, I'd have to say D.
Ensure that the United States, rather than Europe, would be the dominant power in the Western Hemisphere.
Yes.
All right, let's see if you're right. And you are right again. That's
right.
Incredible. As in most questions on diplomacy, male students did better than females, 66% to 51%. I don't know what that means. Commercial treaties negotiated shortly after the Monroe Doctrine provided that the United States be put on a par with Latin America's other trading partners. Okay, that little beat that you just heard right now is a very special message, and it indicates something that's about to happen that's most glorious and wonderful.
Oh, wait, another thing I want to say. There's like a big manhunt right across the street from me tonight. I was wondering if anything came
through the wire. A manhunt? Wait.
Like right up, like across the street, across from my street, like a hill.
What town are you in?
I'm in Fort Salonga.
Uh-huh.
And the street, it's like on a hill, and I heard this helicopter for about a half an hour, and I went outside and looked. And there's about 15 police cars all going up the street, lights flashing, and there's a helicopter hovering with a searchlight.
We're going to have to discuss this in a little while. That noise that you heard was I assume a warning. We are about, as this manhunt continues in Fort Salonga, we're about to go off the air for a few minutes, but don't panic because we're going to come right back. And we're going to take your phone calls. In fact, I'm going to ask listeners to do something which we don't ordinarily do. Keep the radio on. You're going to hear dead air. You're going to hear static. You may even hear another radio station in the background. But don't touch your dial. We're going to go off the air, okay? It happens sometimes. We have a new transmitter. We're putting it in. It's all part of the process, okay? Don't panic. Leave your radio on. Don't tune away. Stay here. We'll be back in only a few minutes. And I want to make sure that people are here when we come back on, because we'll be taking more phone calls up until midnight. So we fade out gracefully. I'm going to fade up some music now, and in a moment you will hear harsh static. And just think, that is what you could hear all the time if we weren't here. It's kind of sobering. And that's not why we're doing it. We're doing it because we have to. All right, we'll be back in a few minutes. Okay, that wasn't so bad now, was it? No, of course not. Well, we are here. We're back. I sound weird for some reason. I must have a head cold. Okay, we're back. 632-6901. 632-6901, area code 518. No, area code 516. Just testing. Give us a call. It only lasted a few seconds, and I'm told that it may happen again for up to 30 seconds, where we'll just go off the air for a few seconds as they do something up there in the transmitter room. These kind of things happen all the time. We didn't lose you, did we? I hope not. There's no calls coming in. 632-6901. Let's hear from people out there, find out what's going on in your lives. Don't have to ask any one of these silly questions. They're sort of getting on my nerves, but it's good to be able to ask these questions now when you don't have to answer them right, you know? Nothing like the pressure of a test of some sort. There was an interesting thing happened. I was on the front page of the Times today. Federal judge in Manhattan declared yesterday that poor people have a constitutional right to beg and struck down the Metropolitan Transportation Authority's ban on panhandling in the city's subways. How do you feel about that? The decision is the first by a federal court to find that panhandling is a free speech right protected by the First Amendment. Legal experts said it could signal a sharp change in direction for a legal system that has, for centuries, monitored, regulated, and sometimes entirely prohibited begging. The judge, Leonard B. Sand, ruled that the transit agency could not enforce no begging rules it hoped would bring order to a system that many riders had come to see as chaotic. The decision also invalidated a no begging policy of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Well, it is chaotic, you know? It's chaotic when you see people begging in the streets. It's chaotic when you have to step over the bodies in Penn Station and Grand Central Station. But it's also real, folks. It's also what's going on. There's a lot of homeless people. There's a lot of poor people. There's a lot of desperate people. And you've got no right to be sheltered from that. You know, it's what's really happening in the streets. It's what's really happening in the subways. And nothing's going to get done about it if we don't see it, right? A lot of us step over them and don't even notice them being there. Don't feel a thing anymore. And that's sad. But as long as they're there, as long as they're staring us in the face, there's hope that somebody will see and somebody will do something. Let's get back to what the article says here. Lawyers for two homeless men who had challenged the no-begging policy, and I think that's amazing that two homeless men actually were able to do this, to challenge the system and change the system. It's sort of an inspiration. Lawyers for these two homeless men who had challenged the no-begging policy said that begging amounted to nothing more than one person asking a question of another, and that should be protected by the First Amendment, Judge Sand said. The simple request for money by a beggar or panhandler, he wrote, cannot but remind the passerby that people in the city live in poverty and often lack the essentials for survival. Even the beggar sitting in Grand Central Station with a tin cup at his feet conveys the message that he and others like him are in need. While often disturbing and sometimes alarmingly graphic, begging is unmistakably informative and persuasive speech. A few state courts have dealt with the issue of begging, including an appeals court in Florida that in 1984 recognized a free speech right. But legal experts said no consensus has emerged on the issue. They said Judge Sand's ruling from the influential federal district court in Manhattan could frame an issue that is very likely to become more pressing as attention to the problem of homelessness and some people's anger at panhandlers increases. In the face of the legions of homeless that face us in the streets, said Paul G. Chevigny, a law professor at NYU, the decision speaks well for the humanity of the federal judiciary that they're willing to recognize the right of the poor person to ask others to help. That's pretty much where it all boils down to, I guess. And that's a positive thing. You know, usually I report on negative things, but I think that's a real positive step. Where really freedom of speech is upheld, and also the rights of a bunch of people that have certainly been put upon in the past. Our number is 632-6901, area code 516, and maybe I'll go out to the teletype and see if the island's been nuked or something, because usually about this time the phones are out of commission because of all the calls that are coming in. You know, maybe that's it, because all these students are back on campus now. You know, we can't handle incoming calls sometimes. I don't think they still have enough incoming lines to this university. So you may be getting a busy signal, but that's not really a busy signal. It simply means that all the lines are tied up. Okay, there we go. There's some calls. Let's get some more in here. Get some more calls. Come on. Let's tie up those lines. In the good sense, of course. 632-6901, area code 516. Last week we had people in here for the first time ever calling up a talk show. You know, that's an incredible thing to be on the radio for the first time. And we were saying how no other station really allows you to do that. And it should be something that more people are into, because you all have something to say. You all have your own unique experiences. Nobody knows what you have been through except you. That's why we need to hear from you. 632-6901, area code 516. And tell us what's on your mind, your opinions of any of the things we've been discussing, your thoughts for the future. And actually, your last chance to talk to me for a while, since I'll be away next week and the week after, and maybe even the week after that. But I'll probably be calling in from God knows wherever I wind up being as I journey around the Midwest this time, looking for answers, looking for flowers on the side of the road, that kind of thing. You know, it's trip across America, yeah. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening.
Yes?
Yes.
I have a comment.
Okay, go ahead.
About the poor people?
Yeah.
That are living in the city?
Uh-huh.
I live in Long Island, and I'm a middle-class person, and I go to college, and I work full-time. And I'm a history student, so I heard your history questions before. And about the poor people, historically, there always were poor people, and in the future, there always will be poor people. That's just an opinion.
Right. Well, that's probably a fact.
Right.
Well, how do you feel about the about poor people begging in the subways?
I feel just let them be.
It doesn't pose a threat to you.
Well, I don't ride the subways into the city, so.
How about say the Long Island Railroad or something?
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Payphone. I'm at a King Cullen shopping center.
Oh, well, you know about those King Cullen payphones.
4-8-9-0-4-2.
Sorry?
3-4-8-9-0-4-2.
We're going to call you back?
Oh, never mind. Never mind. I'd just let them be.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good to me. Any other comments?
I'll call back when I get home.
Oh, well, I don't know if we'll still be on. We only have 12 minutes left, but call back whenever.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
632-6901. Good evening.
All right. I want to give you a little test.
Okay, go ahead. I've been waiting for this.
Okay, Bible knowledge.
Oh, boy.
Okay, here's a true false.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Okay, which came first, man or the animals?
According to the Bible?
Yeah.
According to the Bible, it was man, right?
Actually, it's a trick question because it says both came. It has two accounts, all right?
Yeah.
It's the first one, you know, about the, it says the fifth day. Then God commanded, let the earth produce all kinds of animals, life, domestic and wild, large and small, and it was done. But God made them all, and he was pleased with what he saw. Right? I'm reading from the Good News Bible. Right? Then God said, and now we must make human beings. Okay? They will be like us and resemble us. They will have power over fish, the birds, and animals, domestic, wild, and large and small. Okay?
Okay.
So we first have the animals, then we have man. Right?
Okay.
Hold on a second now. Let me find this. Okay. So first we have the animals, then we have man. Then the Lord, this is like, this is Genesis, Genesis 1, 24, 26, if anybody wants to look it up. Okay, then we have Genesis 2, it's like 18. Then God, Lord, said, it is not good for man to live alone. I will help him make a suitable. I'll make a suitable companion to help him. So he took some soil from the ground and formed all the animals and all the birds. Then he brought them to the man to see what he would name them.
God gave names to all the animals. Bob Dylan.
Yeah. So first we have an account where they say, all right, first we have the animals, then we have man, then we have man, and then we have animals. Contradicts itself. Which one is true?
Well, you can get the whole thing thrown out in court then.
Yeah, throw it out. There's some good stuff in the Bible. But,
oh, yeah.
Because I mean, people take it literally. I have another one. This is really weird. This came to me in a dream, so this is pretty bizarre. You know how everybody said God is, Jesus was the only Son of God, right?
Yeah.
It says, Genesis is really good. You should check it out. It said, Genesis 6, the wickedness of mankind. Okay? When mankind had spread all over the world and girls were being born, some of the supernatural beings, and I have a little, like, footnote here, and it says, supernatural beings, or sons of the gods, or sons of God, saw that these girls were beautiful, so they took the ones they liked.
Okay.
A little bizarre, ain't it?
That's Genesis, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd like to hear that one read in church.
Yeah, you know, I was watching, you know, I love watching those guys on TV, like Gene Scott.
Oh, boy, he's amazing, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, smoke them cigars, Gene, all right?
He brings tears to my eyes.
And I saw these other people today, and they quote the Bible, right? And they, like, this chapter, this line. You know, hey, I could quote the New York Times and get the same effect, right? I could quote the...
Yeah, but you see, you got to quote the Bible because that lends a certain credence to anything you say. You're selling a used car, you quote the Bible, all of a sudden you're in with a lot of people you wouldn't be in with ordinarily.
Yeah, these people, man, these little, I don't know, they need... Because I had Jehovah's come to my door today.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they come... You know, I don't mind that. I like to sit down and chat with these people, but they start pumping me for money. They say, oh, we have this book. Can you give us 50 cents? I was like, sorry about that, you know.
50 cents for a book? That's not a bad deal.
Yeah, you know, she just, that's all the first thing she said. Can you give it? I'm like, I don't know, man. You know, yeah. I don't know.
I think they got to update their prices, you know.
Well, you know, it's not really no money, 50 cents. But that's the first thing they hit me with was 50 cents. And I was, you know, not even trying to tell them, you know, look, this, we're Jehovah's and we're here and we're, you know. Like, oh, you know, I'm coming around, you know, we're Jehovah's.
But, you know, they're a constant. They're like the UPS man. It never changes. They're always there.
Yeah, that's the first time I ever ran into these people. I don't know.
Well.
You know, if that's the gig, that's all right with me, you know. It's no problem. I have no problem with that.
That's all a part of, you know, freedom of speech. You say, you know, you don't want to talk to them, then you don't talk to them.
Yeah, you have freedom of speech.
Right, but I, you know, I don't think we should be in a society where we say, you know, I don't want anybody coming to my door, I don't want anybody calling me on the phone, but there should be a way for you to easily get out of it if you don't want to deal with it at that moment.
Yeah, if you can say, hey, look, sorry, bam, close the door.
Right.
And they're used to that. People are used to that, but, you know, if that's the gig, that's all right. You know, that's not what I'm into. I think it's a little bit more complicated than just read the Bible.
Right.
Go to church every Sunday.
You should go around door to door and just say, you know, I think it's more complicated than what these people are saying, to see if you can get people to agree with you.
Yeah, can I have 50 cents? You know?
Yeah.
No. So I just thought I'd give you that little test, and, you know, maybe some people will say, no, it can't be true, and then look it up.
Well, you know, it's so overblown, this whole Bible deal, you know? Let's just live in harmony.
Yeah, it's...
Stop quoting things and start living.
Do you ever see that special on PBS with Joseph Campbell? Power of Myth.
No, I don't think I ever did.
That was really good. I mean, what he did was he looked at, there's a whole field of mythology where they look at, they compare mythologies across different cultures and look at the similarities, and there's so many similarities. Like, first of all, the flood, the whole story of the flood and things, that appears in like 8 or 9 or 10, 15 mythologies, you know, from American Indian to, you know, the Judeo-Christian, and just a whole different group of mythologies, and it symbolizes something, you know. I mean, the religion is important, and people like trying to play it down because it institutionalized religion, which is a bunch of, personally, I don't want to say it, you know. I think it's a bunch of crap because, you know, somebody's telling you what it is, and it, nobody knows what it is. I mean, everybody's looking for it.
Uh-huh.
But, so they compare, he looks at all these mythologies, and it's what it is. I'm trying to think of how to say it. It's a broader,
Further interpretation.
No, it's something to do. It's an indication of the psychological state of man and what, you know, there are certain things go across cultures because brain is, you know, brain and people's experiences are similar across cultures in many respects and what they're looking for. And it's, you know, it's really not ironic, but amazing to when you start looking at different cultures and you start seeing the same stories, you know, I think Bullfinch has a whole classification system where they have classified all the mythologies down, you know, virgin birth, and virgin birth shows up in many, many different mythologies.
Right, that's Bullfinch's mythology.
Right.
I've seen that book in various places.
Hey, you should pick it up. I mean, the story...
It's a heavy book, in more ways than one. It's really big.
Yeah, like even the Greek myths, if you read it, it's really surprising how... When you read those, you see a lot of those same stories appearing, the same format, I mean, the same ideas appearing in different stories nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I can't give you an example right now off the top of my head, but if you look back and you look at all these myths, I mean, nowadays, the human condition really hasn't changed in 5,000 years. So people are still writing about the same things, you know, who is it that Plato said about was it Socrates said about the youth of today? You know, they have this famous quote, you know, these today are no good, they only care about themselves and everything.
Yeah, I think Ann Landers printed that.
Yeah, like Plato said it, like, you know, a couple thousand years ago. And it's true today. Everybody says, oh, the youth of today is no good and everything.
It's true. That's what they say, and they'll always say it. Listen, sir, thanks for calling. I want to get some more calls here.
Easy.
Okay. Speaking of Ann Landers, though, just for a minute here, because this is on my mind. This came for me in the mail today. It's a... Looks like one of these tube things, you know, that you look through and see things on the other end. But it's more than that. A couple of weeks ago, Ann Landers or Dear Abby, or one of them, I don't know the difference. Does anybody know the difference? I don't. I can't tell the difference. I mean, I read them differently, but I can't remember who said what. Doesn't really matter. One of them said, call this 800 number to get a free copy of the Bill of Rights. And I said, yeah, you know, the Bill of Rights, what a good idea. Everybody should have the Bill of Rights. So, today my Bill of Rights arrived after I called the 800 number and gave them my address. And guess who it's from? It's from the Philip Morris Company. Tobacco Company. And then on this tube is all the companies that they own. And it's scary, folks. It's scary. Maxwell House, Miller Lite, Jell-O, Oscar Mayer, Breakstones, Bird's Eye, Country Time, Philadelphia Brand Cream Cheese, Brim Decaffeinated Coffee, Seal Test, Baker's, Cheese Whiz, Crystal Light. Oh, of course, Philip Morris cigarettes. Antonins! I mean, I'm supposed to open this thing and read the Bill of Rights after seeing this? I don't even want to deal with the Bill of Rights. Boy. And I think Ann Landers should have told us, or Dear Abby, or whoever the hell it was, should have told us that it was Philip Morris Company that's giving out the Bill of Rights when you call this 800 number. I mean, somehow it taints the whole democratic process when you have one of these lobby-minded tobacco companies dedicated to preserving their right to killing off most of Americans when they're the ones that are pushing this down our throats. Boy. You have to wonder, why are they giving away the Bill of Rights? Hey, maybe they're giving away the Bill of Rights. That's got something to do with it.
I am the Bill of Rights.
You are, huh? Who are you?
This is Bill.
Bill. Bill.
How you doing?
You mean Brother Bill?
Yeah.
Brother Bill, who used to be on at this time? After me, that is?
That's true.
Wow.
The one, the only.
But now you're on the phone.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
I'd like to greet you. A very fond good evening.
Well...
Good to hear from you, Eric. And also, I just wanted to say a couple of things.
You just knocked the station off the air with that, but let's... why don't you repeat that again, because we just went off for a second while you did that.
Okay, I didn't even notice that. How stupid of me. I just wanted to greet you, say good evening to you and the listeners, and I just wanted to get to talk about two things. Number one, you were in Florida not too long ago, as you said last week.
That's right.
And I, too, was in Florida at the same time.
Yeah, a lot of people were in Florida at the same time.
And now I know of the Koches. The USB personalities.
Uh-huh, except they were there a few weeks after I was there. But I know our program director was in Florida, and I know Susan Davidson, formerly Susan DeVoutade, was in Florida, and Don, the campus bulletin board person, was in Florida.
Wow.
A lot of people were in Florida, plus all the people that live in Florida, they were there, too.
Yes, I visited Rose and Artie, I'm sure you remember those folks.
They live there, right, yeah.
That's right, Rose Imperato, a very, very... popular celebrity in Jacksonville, Florida, as a morning newswoman.
That's amazing. USB people just keep going on to do amazing, incredible things.
It is amazing and incredible, but I just
George
want to make
Bush
that...
started out at USB, you know.
George Bush?
Yeah.
Really? I hope
he owes everything to us.
Let's hope he ends his career at USB also.
Well, we'll talk about that later. But, okay, bring up your points quickly because I'm about to be kicked off the air here.
Hey, one other thing.
One way or another.
This is one other thing that bugs me when you make a phone call or whatever, and you've been talking for a while, from a payphone, I mean, and they say, 40 cents, please. Please deposit 40 cents for the next 1 minute or whatever it is. And then you put the money in, and they waste your time telling you that you did.
Right, and they say, you have 40 cents credit towards overtime.
I know. And meanwhile, the conversation is like hanging on this.
Right.
This recording. And it just, I don't know, I think that bothers me because now it's your time, why are they wasting it?
Exactly, well, yeah, you pay for the time that they take to tell you that, that's correct.
Well, it just bothers me and maybe something can be done about it. Like, you know, this is the 90s now, we're not a bunch of, dumb morons walking around the planet. I mean, let me retract that whole statement, actually.
Yes, I think perhaps you better in the interest.
I think I'll just end the night on that note. Not, we just want to see. Yeah. I noticed. All right, man. Very brief. Okay, we're back.
You missed it.
Are we back? You can just flip that over.
Oh,
still got time? Okay. Well, we're back. We're back. And hopefully, are we back for good, do you think? Well, I don't know. Well, who knows? We never know. It's only temporary. Everything's just temporary here on this planet. I guess we lost all our listeners, but who cares?
You still have one.
That's right. You're still here. You didn't hang up. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I just wanted to, in closing, say that we were talking about that phone thing before, that aggravates me. But one thing that pleases me very much is the new WUSB transmitter.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Say it. And the USB Radiothon coming up in April, and the USB official transmitter turning on ceremony, which will take place on Sunday. Let me look at the calendar again. Sunday, February 18th at exactly 2:30 p.m. So circle that date on your calendars and plan to be listening to the radio. And compare what you're going to hear now with what you're going to hear then and see if it sounds any different or any better and things like that. And we'll be talking about that more in the weeks to come.
Got to tweak it up, make a couple of adjustments.
Brother Bill, when can the folks hear you on this radio station?
Oh, I'll be on this Wednesday at 3 in the afternoon. So as you're driving home from work or waking up from bed, tune it in.
Okay, and how's Brother Nick doing?
Oh, he's just dandy as usual.
Yeah, great.
Indeed.
Okay, well, it's good hearing from you. You guys got to stop up sometime, eh?
Yeah, I would love to, man. It's good talking to you, Eric. And once again, good night. And I don't know. I guess that's about it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Let's hope we don't have any more unscheduled outages, but you never know at this place, do you? This is Eric Corley. The program's been brain dead. Hopefully I'll be back, but if not, I'll be definitely back the week after that. So now you know exactly what I'll be up to. Hopefully I'll live up to that schedule. Okay, very funny, guys, very funny. All right. Well, anyway, that's the last time you're going to hit me, because I'm out of here. Erica's up next, and I'll see you when I see you, huh? Brain Damage, signing out. WUSB, Stony Brook.
Hi, this is Matt with the concert billboard for Sunday, January 28th. Guess what? Nothing happening. And nothing on Monday or on Tuesday either. Have to wait till Wednesday for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers and Lenny Kravitz at the Nassau Coliseum. Thursday, The will be at the Beacon Theater. Friday, February 2nd, Marshall Crenshaw will be at the Bottom Line. Mucky Pup and Human Rights will be at Sundance. B.B. King, John Mayall, and Coco Taylor will be at the Beacon Theater. The Flesh Tones and the Dragsters will be at Maxwell's, and They Might Be Giants will be at the Village Gate. Marshall Crenshaw and They Might Be Giants will return to their respective locations on February 3rd. And Lays Rocket, Gothic Slam, and Napalm will be at Sundance. Take Six and New York Voices will be at Carnegie Hall. And Henry Rollins will be at Maxwell's. Sunday, February 4th, the Billy Bang Quartet will be at the Knitting Factory. Tuesday, February 6th, the B-52s will be at Radio City for three straight nights, 6th, 7th, and 8th. The first two are sold out. Camper Van Beethoven will be doing the same thing at CBGB's, but tickets are available for all three nights. Sister Carol will be at SOB's. On Thursday, February the 8th, Clarence Clemens will be at the New Ritz. Friday, February 9th, Jack Bruce and Ginger Baker will be at the New Ritz. DRI, Sick of It All, Nasty Savage, and INC will be at Sundance. February 10th, Marillion and Flies on Fire will be at the New Ritz. Ladysmith Black Mambazo will be at Bay Street. Babylon AD will be at Sundance. David Benoit and the Dave Samuels Band will be at Town Hall. Warren Zevon will be at the Beacon Theater. The Subdudes will be at the Lone Star Roadhouse, and the Meat Puppets and 11th Dream Day will be at the Arts Center. Erasure will be at Nassau Coliseum on Thursday, February 15th, and Chris Christopherson will be there the same night. On Friday the 16th, Erasure is sold out at Madison Square Garden. Todd Rundgren will be at the New Ritz on the 16th and 17th, and Debbie Harry will be at Bay Street. On the 17th, Shinehead and Boone Squad will be at Bay Street, and the Roaches will be at the Town Hall. On the 18th, Tears for Fears and Debbie Harry will be at the Meadowlands Arena. The 24th, the Ramones will be at Bay Street. James Cotton will be at IMAC. Mewhall Richard Abrams Quartet will be at Stony Brook's Stoller Center for the Arts. Galaxy 500 will be at Maxwell's, and Ace Frehley will be at Sundance. March 3rd, the Jesus and Mary Chain and Nine Inch Nails will be at the New Ritz. March 12th, Alice Cooper and Front will be at the New Ritz. Marianne Faithfull will be at the Bottom Line March 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. And Ian McCulloch and Ultra Vivid Scene will be at the New Ritz on March 23rd. Concert Billboard is brought to you four times each weekday at 3 and 9 a.m., 4:30 and 10 p.m., and on weekends at 12 noon and 12 midnight. Just in case you've missed anything, give us a call here at WUSB at 516-632-6901. And stay tuned to WUSB throughout the week for ticket giveaways. This is Matt here on WUSB Stony Brook. Have fun, everybody.